Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today, once again, I have Ray Bengo. Ray is a developer evangelist for Microsoft, focusing on web technology, and he's an advocate of the open web. I want to ask him about that. But Ray, how are you?
I'm doing good, Jesse. It's been a while since we talked.
It has, and very much missed. For a short moment in history, we were on the same team at Microsoft. Yep. And,
but the one thing I've noticed is that you have a mustache and you have a little goatee going on. What is this?
Do we have the camera turned on?
No, but I can see the picture that you put up on Skype, and you know you're looking I don't know, a little intimidating now. I don't know if I can mess with you anymore.
The first to say it's intimidating, so maybe it has to go.
No, it's actually good. It's a good one. It's it's a little scary. I don't know. I think I used to intimidate you with my goatee, and now it's like the other way around. I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting at Telerik, of the male evangelists, I think all but one have a goatee. It's very strange.
And that one would be Brandon.
That may be that. So how have you been doing at Microsoft? Everything going well?
Oh yeah, it's been going good. I celebrated 3 years at Microsoft in March, which was a really awesome achievement, and I'm very happy. It's really flown by. I was surprised. It feels like just yesterday I joined Microsoft. And if you remember when I joined, it was we were part of the MSDN team.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to say, God, a little bit over a year ago, I switched over to the developer evangelism team. So I'm a dedicated evangelist now, focusing on web technologies, and it's been great. I really enjoy my job. I love going to conferences. I love speaking. I love talking with developers. I think I've always been like a social bird.
Yes, it seems like a perfect fit for you. Are you in the same group as John Galloway, or is that separate?
John is in, John is in a different group because John, if I'm correct, he does focus on Windows 8 apps. I haven't talked to John in a bit.
Yeah,
so.
He focuses on ASP.NET, but it's through the Web Azure DPE group.
He's part of the umbrella of DPE, but it's just a different focus. So yeah, no, I focus on the web, Internet Explorer, our HTML5, web-based technologies, things like that. So it's all just web for me.
Okay. Well,
and I like that, actually. It's cool.
You just named half a dozen topics that I definitely want to ask you about.
Okay.
At the introduction, I said that you're an advocate of the open web.
Yep.
And so what was I talking about? What does that mean?
You can look at the web in a couple of different ways, I guess. You can look at it as like a vehicle for pushing out your own, proprietary stuff, or you can look at it as a platform that you can build upon and let anybody use the browser of their choice and the technologies of their choices. And so to me, that's kind of how I look at it. I believe in cross-browser development. I believe in letting people use the browser of their choice to get to webs and ensuring that they have the same experience across the board. To me, that's really important. And whether it's on mobile or whether it's on desktop, I don't know. I feel like if I go to a website, I should get a cool experience. Whether it's on IE10 on the Windows Phone 8, or Chrome on Android, or Safari on iOS, or Opera Mini on a regular device. I'm a firm believer in cross-browser development, so that's kind of what I advocate.
Okay, and is Microsoft behind that message as well? Does Microsoft support and give you the resources that you need to facilitate that?
Yeah, so far they've done a great job of that. If you look at the way that IE9 kind of kicked it off with a lot of the support for HTML5 based features, and now with IE10, which is really, really strong, and it's gotten kudos in the industry from developers. Microsoft is all on board with web development and web standards. And at least for me, my job is substantially easier than my predecessors, like let's say Chris Wilson or Joe DiRosato, who had to support earlier versions of IE that maybe they weren't as standards compliant as some of the newer browsers that you see now. So for me, my job is substantially easier, and having Microsoft be a big advocate of standards now, it's just icing on the cake.
I know that you have been involved with modern.ie, mm-hmm. and I just took a look at the site. It's certainly an intriguing site. It starts by saying testing for Internet Explorer just got a little easier. Can you tell me a little bit about this site and what I'm looking at here?
Sure. One of the things that a lot of developers have talked about is that, and especially developers who aren't on Microsoft Windows, is that testing for IE is difficult. And, you know, if you're on a Mac or if you're on a Linux machine, I can understand that. There's no version of IE that works on there for you. And in addition, when you want to test out the various versions of IE, you typically have to have a copy of Windows in order to do that. It's cumbersome, to say the least. So there's one of the things that the team wanted to do was to figure out a way that we could provide feedback to developers in an easy-to-digest fashion. So when you go to – we built this site called modern.ie, and what it does is it does a static analysis of your site, and then it also leverages something that we built a while back called the Compat Inspector, which identifies key things that we know could cause problems in terms of compatibility with Internet Explorer and your site. A lot of that revolves around standards-based web development, and unfortunately – a lot of developers had to use browser hacks in the past in order to get a really good rendering experience and at least consistency across the board between the various browsers. So what we've been obviously promoting is, hey, focus on web standards. And if you focus on web standards, you won't have to worry about these inconsistent rendering issues. So with modern.ie, what it does is it does a static analysis and looks at your site and says, hey, these are the things that we've determined might be compatibility issues. A great example that I use is even on my personal blog. On my personal blog, I use WordPress, and I use a template, and I forgot the name of the template, but the template uses jQuery 1.26. So when I do an analysis of my site, it actually shows up and says, hey, you're using jQuery 1.26, which is an outdated version of jQuery. You might want to upgrade. So at least it gives me something that's actionable, something that I can work with and say, all right, what am I going to do to fix this? Then from there, once I'm ready to take it to the next level, well, testing is a big thing. Obviously, for me, testing in IE is not a big deal because I'm in Windows and it's fairly easy. But let's say I wanted to test in some non-modern versions of IE, like IE 6, 7, and 8. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't load multiple versions of IE in my browser. And I'm really shying away from the F12 tools in terms of changing document mode. I only use those for like really low-hanging fruit. When I really want to do some heavy-duty testing, I need the actual browser. So within modern.ie, one of the things that we have done is we've given developers the ability to download virtual machines. Up to this point, there were VPCs, and VPCs were images that Microsoft would put out and allow developers to do the same thing, but the VPCs only worked if you were running an actual version of Windows. And if you wanted to run them in, let's say, VirtualBox or VMware Fusion or Parallels, it was a lot of work. You had to convert things, and it was a mess. So one of the things we set out to do was make it incredibly easy where you can say, here's the operating system I'm on. Here's the virtualization software that I'm using. So let's say you're on OS 10 and you are using Parallels. Well, you can select those two options, and now you can download VMs that are specific for your platform. And that's huge because there's no more converting. There's no more trying to figure out how to make things work. They're there, and you just literally download them and plug them into your virtualization software. So you can imagine the benefit of that. And so there's a couple of options, but the big one is definitely the VMs. And we're going to talk about the other option, which is browser stack, and that's actually pretty cool as well. But when you go in there, you'll have drop-down boxes that say, all right, I'm on Windows, Mac, or Linux. And then from there, you can select your virtualization platform, and it'll change. The virtualization platform options will change based on your specific target OS. So in this case, let's say I was using VMware Fusion. By selecting that, then I can immediately choose to download VMs for IE 6, 7, 8, 9, and even 10, and even something like IE 10 on Win 7. So it's not only IE 10 on Win 8, but it's IE 10 on Win 7. Mm-hmm. So I can download those VMs, and now I have a platform that I can use to test Internet Explorer. Because, you know, I think it's like 48% market share. That's still pretty big, you know? So I think testing IE is still very important.
Well, it sounds like this has made it much more realistic for folks who do not have Windows machines to be able to do that testing.
Yep,
and it
definitely has.
And what about the other non-IE browsers? Are they sufficiently compatible that it's not an issue, or do they have to test those individually, or how do they do that?
So it depends. If you're talking about Chrome and Firefox, and you're on a Mac system, well, the Chrome and Firefox are available for Windows, OS X, and Linux. So they have pretty good coverage there. If you're talking about Safari, then and Safari is pretty pervasive. Safari still has a decent decent market share. That's Mac only. There's not a new version of Safari that's available on Windows. You can use Safari 5.1, but currently Safari is at 6.x. I don't know what the overall version number is, but it's a 6.x, and Apple didn't bring that over to Windows this time around. So if you don't want to install virtual machines, and a lot of people don't want to, because if you look at these laptops nowadays, it doesn't really matter which laptop you use. They're in terms of disk space, even though disk space has come down in price, you'll notice that a lot of them are shipping with SSDs now.
Yes.
SSDs are not inexpensive. So what's happening is, to get a 256 gig SSD, you're paying kind of a premium for it, and people don't want to lose disk space. I totally get it. I wouldn't want to lose 20 gigs myself, So it's painful sometimes to have to say, I'm going to put in 5 VMs in order to test IE.
Right.
So what we did was, we said, all right, let's partner with another company that's called BrowserStack. And if you go to browserstack.com, you can check them out. So browserstack.com is cool because you can do virtualized testing within your own browser. And what I mean by that is, let's say I'm in Internet Explorer 10. I can spark up an instance of BrowserStack and be able to test Safari, Chrome, Firefox within IE10. It's a virtual machine within my browser. What that means is that I don't have to download anything. It's all done in the cloud someplace, and they manage it, and it's true interactivity. It's not like a screenshot type of service. So that's pretty slick. The other part that they offer is they have a Java applet, which will let you tunnel into your system. And so let's say you have a local dev machine or maybe a staging box. You can tunnel into that box and be able to do virtualized testing over the wire. So you can leverage their resources, their browser resources, and test your local development environment within your browser. So it's kind of like a proxy service. It's pretty neat as well.
This is amazing developments that I confess, totally unaware of, and it does seem to have changed radically the ability to test across browsers.
Sure, and if you're not into the web development, I think you focus a lot, for example, on Windows 8 apps and at Telerik, if I remember right.
Yes.
So unless you're specifically into web development, a lot of these tools are really going to be eye-opening. You're going to be like, oh my God, where did this come from? And it's very cool. And the great thing is that as more developers start looking at the web for either building main experiences or even complementary experiences to their Windows 8 apps or iOS apps or their Android apps, the good thing is these tools are available to them. So it's important to get this out. So I'm glad we're talking about it.
Well, let me back you up 100 feet higher and talk a little bit about HTML5 and web standards. And the last time that we spoke, which was not that long ago, there was a sense that HTML5 was really turning a corner and becoming a major player, and open standards were becoming more and more significant. From the sound of it, things have really progressed enormously since then.
And it has. The great thing about developers nowadays, and especially the young new developers that are just coming into the industry, a lot of them don't have the concept of that proprietary effort that had to go on in order to build consistent rendering experiences across the board. They're coming in at a great time because they're getting taught the best practices for building standards-based sites. They're going in there and they're not having to worry about, oh, let me build this proprietary extension in order to render something out. A lot of them are being educated in following standards. And the cool thing is that when they do that, their sites typically just work in the modern browsers. Now, it's not to say that in non-modern browsers like IE 6, 7, and 8, and yeah, IE 6 is still out there in some cases, that you're not going to have to use some proprietary stuff. But the cool thing is that the community is really has rallied around standards and have embraced it. There are some things that are kind of iffy. Especially in the mobile space, because WebKit based browsers have become so dominant in the mobile space. Some developers have chosen to kind of forsake standards. I guess that's the best way to use it, and leverage proprietary WebKit based prefixes. What that does is it basically locks it locks a site into a specific browser in order to render it properly. So if you use, let's say, Box Reflect, and in within a website, well, that's specific to WebKit and won't render in, let's say, Mozilla Firefox or Internet Explorer 10. And that kind of locks that site into a WebKit-based browser like Safari or Chrome. Now, the good thing about it is that the guys at Google have said, hey, we're going to kind of go off in our own route, and we're going to come up with a Blink rendering engine. They're going away from WebKit, and they're going to come with Blink. And they're doing away with vendor prefixes. And what that means is that they'll hide things behind an experimental flag. And that kind of prevents developers from leveraging these proprietary prefixes until they become standardized and until they're ready. So I actually like the fact that they're doing that. That's actually a positive thing. But for now, that's mobile is a bit of a challenge in that sense. And then what ends up happening is sometimes that trickles over into the desktop experience as well, and it makes certain sites not render the way they should.
So let's talk about the learning curve. If someone is coming into this now, either new or having been away from it for long enough, where are the starting points? Where are the entry points for understanding the standards and for building standards-based apps?
So I think the W3C is obviously the place to go if you want to fully understand the standards and you want to read it, you know, dig deep into the spec. Another initiative that was my headset almost got pulled off. Bear with me one second while readjust it. Yeah, I just need to readjust it real quick. So there's another initiative that got started up, and it's called it's webplatform.org, and it's an initiative that was started up by all the major players in the web. That includes Microsoft, Google, Adobe, a lot of great players, Mozilla, of course, that contributed documentation and just information about web standards and how to build and best practices on how to build websites. So if you go to webplatform.org, it'll talk about all that stuff. If I was a new developer, this would probably be my starting point. This is where what's going to tell me what is a standard, how do I use it, what are the best practices, and I definitely recommend somebody starting from here.
The technology is advancing so fast, and there are so many resources being applied here that I think a fair number of people are feeling that perhaps they've missed the boat, that it's almost too late to learn all that they need to know in order to build a modern website. So you have technologies like ASP.NET and ASP.NET MVC on the one hand, and you have JavaScript and all the myriad libraries and that go with that, and jQuery and much, much more. And right. Then you have CSS3 and all there is to learn with that. And then you have HTML5 and all that goes with that. And it does feel a bit, I think, overwhelming to try to get a handle on building modern web applications and websites given all of that.
Sure. And it can be, but I see it as the same way as any type of environment you go to, you get into. For example, when I joined Microsoft, I looked at the ASP.NET world. And the .NET world in general. And to me, it was daunting. It was like, oh my God, this is massive. And I never jumped into that, but when I started looking through the resources, it was just simple to go through and break them down step by step, and you develop your experience in it. Now, would I be a Scott Hanselman? Probably not anytime soon, because Scott's a beast, you know? But the same applies to web development. The principles behind HTML5 and CSS3 are the same as what they were before. It's just a new feature set. There's new capabilities within HTML now. So if you picked up a book today on HTML and CSS, not HTML5 and CSS3, just HTML and CSS that focused on standards, you're fine. You should be able to progress pretty easily and then be able to leverage the newer features that are available down the road. In terms of, I think to me, the harder part becomes, when you want to build scalable apps, and that's more of an architectural decision than anything else. It's not a technology decision. A programming language is a programming language. And so whether you pick up Ruby on Rails or ASP.NET or Python and Django, whatever it might be, the programming language and framework of choice, to me, is the learning that is the lesser of the problem than it is understanding how those scale and how you're going to be able to build your application for scalability down the road. That's an architectural thing. So I don't think anybody's behind the eight ball right now. There's just, if you really want to build something, there's so many tutorials online. There's so many resources. And if you really wanted to get up to speed quickly, in fact, I was just reading an article this morning. There are boot camps out there that if you want to pay money, you'll spend 3 months doing hardcore development and come out of there and, you know, and be in most cases be successful. I was reading the story about this one developer who was I believe he was a public relations person, and he just wanted a career change and he wanted to go into software development. So basically he went ahead and dropped $11,000 on one of these developer boot camps, which was 3 months long, and finished it. And literally like a week or two afterwards was offered a job at a very substantial pay increase. And they quoted figures that said that most people who graduate from these come out with job offers of around $80,000 to $100,000 right off the bat. So that's pretty darn good.
That's a great story. 3 month boot camp.
Yep.
I'm trying to decide between how much you could learn in a 3 month boot camp as opposed to spending 3 months in front of your computer with Pluralsight and a stack of books.
Well, you know, it depends. You got to remember that some people learn really easily by watching a video or reading a book. Some people actually prefer to have the mentoring. That's that handholding, that person they can depend on to add, like, you know, like if you were in a classroom asking your instructor questions. So the other part of it is that in some cases, these boot camps are going to put you straight into real life scenarios. When you visit a site like Pluralsight or you pick up a book, in many cases, you're going to have wonderful reference material. But when it comes to real life usage and scenarios, that's where they don't meet the need. And that's where something like a boot camp does. So I kind of understand why a boot camp would be really, really valuable. So now, if I can pay $11,000 and come out with a career that would allow me to play video games all day long, I'd be really happy.